everyone, and welcome to this ICIS podcast. My name is Andrew Betwain. I'm a reporter on the Global Crew team. And I'm joined today by Daisy Desselliers, an energy market reporter, and Nazif Nazmul from the ICIS feedstocks team.
Hello.
Hi, Andrew.
So recently, ICIS launched a clean oils topic page with loads of information on this emerging market. So in this podcast, we're going to focus on the biodiesel market and its fundamentals going forward over the course of the rest of 21 and moving into the post-pandemic world, which, as we know, is going to be a sort of majorly changed market in the way that the world is going to be functioning. Biodiesel is one of the many facets of the clean oil revolution. Its uses are wide and its feedstocks come from a variety of everyday sources that, if used properly, could lead to a revolution in decarbonizing energy. So with this, I turn first to Nazif. Nazif, could you talk us through about where we're going currently with the world of biodiesel? I understand that ICIS is soon to launch a new section on Uchemy in the feedstock section, which you work in, and also about HVO. So can you explain to us, to our listeners, about what's happening here?
Yes, absolutely, Andrew. The biodiesel industry in Europe is in a transitional phase right now because, as you pointed out, we're slowly shifting towards more waste-based biodiesel grades and moving away from the conventional crops-based biodiesel. So in the past, for over a decade, we've been trading rapeseed-based biodiesel in Europe. We've also been importing Asian palm-based biodiesel and Argentinian South American soy-based biodiesel. But now, because of the EU RED II mandates, the EU Renewable Energy Directive mandates, we're slowly transitioning away from those crop-based biodiesel to more waste-based biodiesel. And that's where the market is right now, because the mandates just came into effect in 2020. Soon after that, obviously, we had the pandemic to deal with, and right now we're slowly recovering from those economic ramifications. And, you know, we're seeing a steady resurgence in spot activities, including Uchemy demand as well. Uchemy is the used cooking oil-based biodiesel grade, and it's gaining a lot of traction. Like I said, it's mainly because of the mandates, but you also have specific countries that have their own rules and regulations. Germany, for example, just very recently, in the last week of May, they announced that they're now aiming to meet a 25% greenhouse gas GHG savings biofuel consumption quota by 2030 as per new legislations. That's going from the current 6% GHG savings biofuels consumption quota, which is what they have right now, to 25% by 2030. So that's not to say that all of that will be based on conventional biodiesel, because moving ahead, a lot of countries are trying to achieve circular economy by including more waste-based biofuels in their energy mix. So used cooking oil will be used to produce Uchemy. And then you'll also have Uchemy serving as a feedstock for HVO, which is hydrotreated vegetable oil. Daisy will touch upon that in a bit. And this is all very interesting, Andrew, because looking ahead and based on where we are right now, we're clearly at a transitional phase, a transformational phase even, you could say. There's an intrinsic link almost as to how your waste-based biodiesel grades can have the same feedstocks, which is something refineries are responding to as well. Uchemy can be used as a feedstock to produce HVO, and HVO also serves as a feedstock for sustainable aviation fuel. So there's a clear link between all those. Several refineries are going through conversions and turning into biorefineries now. We've seen Total doing it. We've seen a few others doing it, and it's going to be very interesting moving ahead, because ultimately one of the main issues in the supply chain remains the finite amount of raw materials used to produce different biodiesel grades, especially vegetable oil and used cooking oil. You can only have so much of used cooking oil, right? So there might be some bumps along the ride. The supply and demand dynamics are actually already evolving. The demand is already there because of the mandates. And countries like Germany are pushing hard for more consumption of Uchemy and HVO. So that's where we're at right now. And meanwhile, you know, right now spot prices are at record-breaking all-time highs, predominantly because of those feedstock shortages. The ongoing biodiesel spot demand recovery is going well, slow and steady, but the concern really is about how feedstocks remain short in supply and expensive. We haven't seen many feedstock imports reaching European shores for several months now. Expensive freight charges continue to partly hinder used cooking oil imports from China as well. And, you know, lockdown-induced closure of restaurants really hampered used cooking oil supply across Europe. So those shortages still persist. There are also some issues domestically regarding rapeseed availability. So moving ahead in this decade, there's likely to be a lot of interesting times coming out in terms of feedstock availability and the rising demand and how those two are going to coincide and collide. Now, ICIS will be closely monitoring these developments. We're launching a European UCOME price code within our existing global biodiesel report in June. We're also aiming to launch an HVO code by the end of 2021. We're also working on a sustainable aviation fuel price code right now. So, you know, it's super exciting times all around, Andrew, and we're very pleased to be extending our biodiesel and biofuels coverage as the industry evolves.
Brilliant. Thank you, Nazif. That was really interesting. It gives us a lot of insight into what the market is going to be doing. So look out for the updates to the feedstock section. There's going to be new sections being brought online over the course of the next the rest of this year. So you can reach out to the feedstocks team about that. Daisy, we're turning to you now. Can you tell us more specifically about the HVO market and what we can see, the trends in it, what's going to be happening in the sort of rest of 2021 and going forward from there on?
Yes, of course. So HVO is a renewable diesel that can be used as transport fuel. Feedstocks for HVO production include vegetable oils, waste oils, and animal fats. HVO presents the advantage that it can be mixed in vehicle engines in any proportion with conventional diesel, even as a replacement. There is no concentration limit. There is no requirement for engine modification or more frequent maintenance. And this differs from standard biodiesel such as FME, which is subject to restrictions for blending in engines because they have different chemical compositions. The HVO market is growing with new capacities being developed and planned for the next years, mainly in Europe, the US, and China. As Nazif said, at the moment, HVO prices are very high in Northwest Europe, mainly due to tight supply, growing demand for transport fuel, and also high cost of renewable feedstocks such as used cooking oils. The evolution for this market depends on different factors. First, on the supply side, where drivers include availability of feedstock supply, but also production capacity development. We see that several major players in the fossil fuel industry are paving the way for HVO development. For example, Total converted a hydrocarbon refinery into a biorefinery in France, where HVO production started up in 2019. Eni also launched a biorefinery in Italy in 2014 that produces HVO. Neste is a pioneer in HVO production, as it opened two refineries in Finland in 2007 and 2009, and it then opened larger refineries in Singapore and Rotterdam. Repsol also announced the plan to produce biofuels from HVO in Spain. So there is growing interest and incentives from oil and gas companies and refineries to become involved in HVO production, which could boost supply. Then another factor closely related to supply is production costs. HVO require high capital expenditures due to high investment for production facilities. Economies of scale can help mitigate this cost. Another important part of the cost is the feedstock. But the advantage of HVO production is that it can use low-cost feedstock from low-quality waste, such as corn oil, animal fats, or used cooking oil. The demand side plays a key role. Demand for transport fuel in general declined due to the pandemic. However, it's expected to grow as countries are progressively reopening. Demand can also come from industrial players. For example, recently some manufacturers in the construction or transport equipment industry announced commitments to use HVO instead of diesel to power their plants and equipment. And finally, key drivers for renewable diesel are policies and regulations, obviously a really important facet in any emerging market. Andrew, could you explain to us what trends you're seeing in this area and where you expect the market to go.
Yeah, thank you for that, Daisy. It's really interesting. And of course, regulatory framework, especially here in Europe with the EU, is such a massive part of the industry. So one of the biggest issues we're likely to see is the two-speed issue. Now, this is very common across multiple areas of the EU. It happens in every single sector of the economy. This is basically refers to the situation where there are countries that are more dynamic, nimble, and able to make much quicker changes and experience more economic growth, or able to change their laws much quicker compared to other countries. Now, often it gets put into a north-south EU divide. So in the current way we have it, we have France, Germany, Denmark, and the Netherlands all being the real leaders in the biodiesels industry. And then we have other parts of the EU which are acting on it much, much slower. So these countries are not necessarily slow because they're not doing well. They're just more cautious, or they require more time to adapt and bring in new regulations. So this is something that the EU, like I said, has in every single sector of the economy. So it's not a new thing. It's just something that always occurs in the EU. The reasons for this are multiple. There's everything from unions to subsidies for industries that'll be affected, to compensation, to decentralization processes. It's important to remember, with always the European framework, that the EU is a 27 member state. It is a beast of regulation and bureaucracy. There is nothing that gets done quickly in the EU. And also, it's important to realize that the biodiesel, the way it's going to be implemented into the market, and the whilst Nazif and Daisy, you both said that things are happening quite quickly, this is definitely a marathon, not a sprint, in terms of bringing it into the market and having its effects be seen. Now, a really interesting facet of the way the EU is regulating the biodiesel is it's very hands-off about it so far. It's passing big, you know, grandstanding climate change initiatives, and there's lots of clean energy conversations happening, but they, the moment they're being very hands-off and giving a lot of power to the actual 27 member states. So this means that we probably won't see any big regulatory promises being made by the EU in terms of biodiesel. There's not going to be big mandates being announced. There's not going to be new big policy announcements. It's going to be more of a softly, slow but steady approach, with a lot of decentralized responsibility being given to the 27 member states. So what this could mean is that we see these countries that are doing a lot already, like the Netherlands, France, Germany, moving much quicker. And that there are going to be further divergences. Obviously, another aspect that we're going to have to take into account with EU regulation is the post-pandemic world, and necessarily the budgets. So money could be very tight going forward. An interesting facet we will have to look out for is, will national governments be as keen on new processes and new energy coming into the market as they were before the pandemic, when they didn't have to worry about huge debts that have occurred through various schemes about the pandemic. Most people are saying, you know, we're going to keep with sustainable fuels and we're going to keep on this, but this will really, really depend on how these countries are doing financially. Now, some other interesting aspects that we don't have time to get in today, but are really going to be mentioned over the coming years, the agricultural and forestry policies. We've got blending mandates. There's going to be subsidies. Tariffs are always a very key factor with the EU. And of course, tax incentives are also going to be used, the carrot and the stick. So it's a really complicated market. And like I said, it's not going to be a sprint. It's definitely going to be a marathon. The EU is not going to make any massive promises to anyone. They are going to sit back and sort of let it happen organically with individual member states. But we are, as Nazif mentioned, seeing some really forward-looking legislation coming out of certain countries. And one of these is France, who have got a lot of headlines recently about the aerospace industry and about the way they've put in this sustainable aviation fuels. So this is going to be an issue that is, it's not going to be a short-term regulatory issue, it's going to be a very long and persistent one. So it's something that people are going to have to make a lot of decisions about going forward for a long time. So that basically brings us to the end of it. I'd like to say thank you to both Daisy and Nazif for their time. And we are going to wrap it up there for today. So please check our main ICIS website for more updates about all of the topics we've discussed. If there's anything that's piqued your interest, which you want to hear more about, please do get in touch with us. We're always keen to hear from you guys and understand more about what your thoughts and feelings are on these issues. We're always happy to do more podcasts. Please visit the biofuels page on the ICIS website as well. There's more information going up there every week, and we are building it up as we go along. So we're really keen to get feedback and see what you guys are thinking about it. But aside from that, that's all we have time for today. Thank you again and goodbye, and we'll hope to see you soon.